our duty with regard to suffering and stress is to comprehend it. Comprehending means putting an end to our passion, aversion, and delusion around it. And in the First Noble Truth, the Buddha defines suffering and stress in its short version as clinging to the five aggregates. We hear that. We tend to focus on the aggregates, that we need to comprehend them, which is true, we do. But we also have to comprehend clinging. In fact, clinging is the real problem. That's the activity that is suffering. So it's good to think about clinging, what it means, and how to develop comprehension for it. There are four types altogether. There's sensuality clinging, view clinging, precept and practice clinging, and doctrine of self clinging. Sensuality clinging has to do with our fascination with thinking about sensual pleasures, planning for sensual pleasures, setting our hearts on sensual pleasures. In other words, it's clinging for what we want in terms of sensuality. View clinging has to do with our ideas about what actually is out there, what's possible in the world, how the world is constructed. Of course, this relates to sensuality in the sense that if you're going to look for sensuality, you want to have an idea of how the world is constructed so you can get what you want. Practice and precept clinging has to do with your sense of what you should do, given the way the world is. And then doctrine of self has to do with how you define yourself in all this. The self here is the negotiator between your sense of what should be done and what you want to do and what's possible. So these four kinds of clinging all work together. Sometimes it seems that the view clinging is the strongest. We have an idea that the world is the way it is. People who see a supernatural side to the world say there's something out there that gives meaning to physical events. People who don't see that dimension say there's no meaning. And both sides see the other side is not playing fair. The materialists think that supernaturalists are dealing in magical thinking. And supernaturalists think that the materialists have no moral values at all. So here we can see that precept and practice, or habit and practice clinging, comes in and plays a role in our idea of what actually is out there. So our ideas of what we want, of what is, or how things work, and of what we should do, influence one another in various ways. But the central one, of course, is your sense of who you are. This is where you get invested. You want happiness. And you've decided you're going to play by certain rules. Or you've decided that the world is a certain way. And that's how you're going to base your decisions on how you act. For instance, if you're going to give up sensuality, you have to have good reasons. You're going to cling to a view of the world. Or to a sense of what should and should not be done. They will explain to you why it is better to give up sensuality, why it's a better trade to give it up. Other people have decided that sensuality is everything. Don't want to hear about worldviews that would downplay the importance of sensuality, or would raise questions about the skillfulness or unskillfulness of your actions. Now, all of these ways of clinging, as the Buddha said, are suffering. In other words, the strategies we use for figuring out how to be happy, those, he says, are our suffering. This is why so much of his teaching goes against the grain. But he doesn't tell us to abandon the idea of happiness altogether. He says simply there are better ways of doing it. And it will involve a view that you use, a view, right view about action and its powers, right view about the fact that there is rebirth, and there are other levels of being, and your rebirth and different levels of being is dependent on your actions. This much of a view the Buddha says you hold on to as your working hypothesis. The same with habits and practices. You develop the precepts. You develop the practice of concentration. These are things you should do, should develop. And you try to develop a sense of yourself as competent. Responsible. And that you will benefit from this. As the Buddha says, when you see things as not self, it's not simply to say, oh, that's the way they are, so I've got to give up on them. It's because, he says, when you try to hold on to things that are not really yourself, you're going to suffer. But if you learn how to let go, it will be for your long-term welfare and happiness. So there's a residual sense of self in there that you use strategically. But to adopt these right forms of clinging, notice views, precepts and practices, or habits and practices, and a sense of the self. Nothing about sensuality on the path. But these are the forms of skillful clinging. You also have to clear away your other forms of attachment. Sensuality, of course, is the big one that's going to pull you off if you're not careful. This is why you have to look carefully at the allure and the drawbacks. There are pleasures, the Buddha says, that come from the senses, but there are lots of drawbacks. To gain sensual pleasures, you have to work hard. Sometimes your work doesn't succeed. You see yourself as a failure. Sometimes it does succeed, and then you've got treasures that you've got to maintain and protect because other people want them. And it's because of our sensuality that we get into conflicts. We see conflict all around us. All because of sensuality. The same with views. The Buddha wants you to see what's the allure and what are the drawbacks. The allure of a particular view about the world. Is that you figure out you can use that particular view or that sense of reality in order to gain your happiness. But then the Buddha has you look at what kind of actions you do based on that view. Like if you have the view that there really is no right or wrong in the world, that there are simply social conventions. Or that your actions have no impact on the world, on your life. But there's nothing after death. You're going to behave in a lot of unskillful ways. And that's going to lead to some very unskillful destinations or undesirable destinations. And even the best possible destinations you can get from a particular view, even mundane right view, have their drawbacks as well. You get to a higher level of heaven, and then you fall. It's very ironic. We work hard to be skillful in our actions, and the rewards come. And then we fall for the rewards. We get unskillful again. In some ways, the round of samsara is like a sick joke. People behave well, they gain the rewards, and then they behave poorly around the rewards. and they fall. So you've got to see that even mundane right view has its limitations. As for precepts and practices, or habits and practices, you see a lot of the ways that people behave that really are harmful, if not to themselves, that are harmful to other people, or harmful to both. Based very much on their ideas of right and wrong, what they should do. And then they end up doing a lot of unskillful things, especially the idea that ends justify the means. But you begin to realize that the ends that you gain here in the world never really last. All we have are means. So that sense of ought that goes around habits and practices, you have to call that into question. Especially the oughts that lead you to do unskillful things for what you think is a noble cause. Underlying all of this, of course, is your sense of you, the person who's invested in these different forms of clinging. Then you have to look into to see, well, what exactly is this you? We work on the identities that would pull us away from the path. And notice they're simply constructs made out of form, feeling, perceptions, fabrications, consciousness, things that come and go. It's like building a house out of frozen meat. As long as it's frozen, you're okay. But then when it starts to melt, you're stuck with a huge mess. So you apply those perceptions to things that you pull you away from the path until the path is really solid. And it's only then that you apply the same perceptions to the path itself. Who is this person who's doing the path? That too is a construct. That, of course, is the last step as you leave the raft, as you step over to the other shore. But in the meantime, you've got to learn how to look at your different senses of what you want, the way you feel the world works, and how you feel you should act in the world. And this you who's invested in all these things, it's the investment that makes us cling. That's why the Buddha said, of all the forms of clinging, its doctrine of self-clinging is the strongest and the deepest and the one that makes all the difference in the world. He said there are other religions that had some understanding or some comprehension of sensuality clinging, view clinging, habit and practice clinging. But because they didn't have any understanding about how we cling to our ideas of self, that those other religions didn't have any enlightened people, any awakened people at all. So look at the way you're invested in your views, in your ideas of what should be done, in your desires, and learn how to question that. Is this really for your best interest? It's when you understand the allure of these various forms of clinging and can compare that with the drawbacks. That's when you can begin to let go, and that's when you really comprehend them. And it's when you comprehend the suffering and can let go of the cause. That's when you find there's something much better.